And here we find, once again, a wise woman averting the deaths of many in the city by handing over Sheba, the one man responsible for this rebellion.
Welcome to Mission 66 from the ministry of Pastor Luis Seau and Transworld Radio. Today, we're diving into 2 Samuel, King David's triumphs, struggles, and lessons in faith, leadership, and God's guidance. Grab your study guide at mission66.org and follow along with John Matthews and Esther Sisulu as we discover how these timeless stories speak into our lives today. Let's get started.
We are so delighted to be back with you once again for a further look into the book of 2 Samuel, which describes the life and the reign of Israel's King David. And we know that God had picked King David to be the leader of Israel in spite of the many from the house of Saul who opposed him. Now, we also see that his own son Absalom rebelled against him. Today in chapters 20 and 21, we'll see that the troubles don't seem to stop. Here's John Matthews with our theme today, The Scent of Death.
Esther, thank you so much. Great to see you and be with you. And a very warm welcome to Mission 66. So good to have your company for this latest episode. A very warm welcome wherever you join us from today and whatever situation you find yourself in. It is so good to be with you. So our theme today will be the smell of death. And it is sad and complicated to see what happens in the life of David, this king who experienced many troubles, conflicts and battles throughout his life. And that may seem discouraging for those who seek to find consolation in the Bible, but it shows us the reality of humanity and how God intervenes in history in order to do great things in the lives of mere human beings, and how a life lived in him is a life of hope, a life of true peace, and a life where we overcome our feelings and our toughest experiences shape us to look more like Jesus, the author of life, peace, and love, and the free giver of those things to us. Now, when we reach chapter 20, David has been facing several problems. This great battle due to the rebellion begun by his own son Absalom. And then there's this conflict between David and his own army due to family reasons. And we see that the relationship between the southern and the northern parts of Israel, that's not looking too good either. And in the middle of all this confusion, in the middle of this division, of this lack of unity at the beginning of chapter 20, the Bible says that into that there came a troublemaker called Sheba, son of Bichri, a Benjamite, and he happened to be there. And he sounded the trumpet and shouted, "We have no share in David, no part in Jesse's son. Every man to his tent, Israel." So all the men of Israel deserted David to follow Sheba, son of Bichri. But the men of Judah stayed by their king all the way from the Jordan to Jerusalem. David has barely even rested from the great battle, from the rebellion caused by Absalom, his own son. And now here, a new conflict is going to rise in the Middle East, bringing more problems for David's reign in Israel. And the Bible says, when David returned to his palace in Jerusalem, he took the 10 concubines he had left to take care of the palace and put them in a house under guard. He provided for them, but had no sexual relations with them. They were kept in confinement till the day of their death, living as widows. So David turns to his new commander, the new general of the army, Amasa, and gives him the following orders. "Summon the men of Judah to me within 3 days, and be here yourself." But when Amasa went to summon Judah, he took longer than the time the king had set for him. And David said to Abishai, "Now Sheba, son of Bichri, will do us more harm than Absalom did. Take your master's men and pursue him, or he will find fortified cities and escape from us." So Joab's men and the Kerethites and the Pelethites and all the mighty warriors went out under the command of Abishai, and they marched out from Jerusalem to pursue Sheba, son of Bichri. Now, Amasa had gained this new position because of David's orders, but David has taken this position from Joab for personal family reasons. That's because Joab had killed Absalom. But as we see here, Amasa does not have what it takes to do this job, to be in this position. He's slow. He's not able to gather the army in time. So David ends up intervening in the situation. And now we have this new dimension of the army organized by David himself with the help of Joab and the other warriors. And it says that while they were at the great rock in Gibeon, Amasa came to meet them, and Joab was wearing his military tunic. And look what happens. Joab pretends to greet Amasa. He goes over to greet him with a kiss, and before anyone would see it, Amasa was stabbed in the stomach and died. This vengeful general, Joab, takes the life of Amasa because he is concerned with his position in David's kingdom. Verse 11. And one of Joab's young men took his stand by Amasa and said, "Whoever favors Joab and whoever is for David, let him follow Joab." And Amasa lay wallowing in his blood in the highway. And anyone who came by seeing him stopped. And when the man saw that all the people stopped, he carried Amasa out of the highway into the field and threw a garment over him. And when he was taken out of the highway, all the people went on after Joab to pursue Sheba the son of Bichri. And Sheba passed through all the tribes of Israel to Abel of Beth-Makkah, and all the Bichrites assembled and followed him in. And all the men who were with Joab came and besieged him in Abel of Beth-Makkah. They cast up a mound against the city, and it stood against the rampart, and they were battering the wall to throw it down. And then a wise woman called from the city, saying, "Listen, listen, tell Joab, come here that I may speak to you." And he came near her. And the woman said, "Are you Joab?" And he said, "I am." And she said to him, "Listen to the words of your servant." He answered, "I am listening." And then she said, "They used to say in former times, 'Let them but ask counsel at Abel.' And so they settled a matter. I am one of those who are peaceable and faithful in Israel. You seek to destroy a city that is a mother in Israel. Why will you swallow up the heritage of the Lord?" And Joab answered, "Far be it from me, far be it that I should swallow up or destroy. That is not true. But a man of the hill country of Ephraim called Sheba, the son of Bichri, has lifted up his hand against King David. Give up him alone, and I will withdraw from the city." And the woman said to Joab, "Behold, his head will be thrown to you over the wall." Then the woman went to all the people in her wisdom, and they cut off the head of Sheba, the son of Bichri, and threw it out to Joab. So he blew the trumpet, and they dispersed from the city, every man to his home, and Joab returned to Jerusalem to the king. And that reminds us, doesn't it, that in the life of David, on occasions we've seen several wise women coming into the story and effectively saving the day and calming things down. Remember the wise woman Abigail, who stopped David from unnecessarily killing her husband Nabal. Then the wise woman of Tekoa convincing David to bring back his banished son Absalom. And once again here, a wise woman averts the deaths of many people in the city by handing Sheba over, the one man responsible for this rebellion. And David's reign, well, it's a little more peaceful now that the situation is settled, but things do not end there. The problems keep on coming. And as we reach chapter 21, Sheba's rebellion has barely ended, and we have a new problem in this chapter that smells of death, conflict, and of war. Bible says that there was a famine in the land for 3 years in the time of David. And David then inquired of the Lord, who said to him, "It is on account of Saul and his blood-stained house. It is because he put the Gibeonites to death." Now, there'd been this oath sworn before the Lord that the Israelites would never touch the Gibeonites, even though they were descendants of the Amorites, which were the Canaanites who'd lived in the land. So David goes to speak to the Gibeonites, and he asks, "What can I do for you? How can I make amends for what had happened?" And listen to how the Gibeonites answer. They say, "Well, look, we have no right to demand silver or gold from Saul or his family, nor do we have the right to put anyone in Israel to death." "What do you want me to do for you?" asks David. And they answered the king, "As for the man who destroyed us and plotted against us so that we have been decimated and have no place anywhere in Israel, let 7 of his male descendants be given to us to be killed and their bodies exposed before the Lord at Gibeah of Saul, the Lord's chosen one." So this demand for vengeance from the Gibeonites because of what had been done to them is presented, and there's this need for execution by way of retributive justice. But observe how many complications that we have resulting from ill-adjusted human relationship that hadn't followed the clear divine principles. So David has to face this battle against Sheba as a sort of revolution within his own kingdom. And after this, the Gibeonites, they then bring vengeance against Saul's family. And now perhaps things seem to be getting better. But listen, verse 15 comes along and it says, "Once again, there was a battle between the Philistines and Israel. And David went down with his men to fight against the Philistines, and he became exhausted. And Ishbi-Benob, one of the descendants of Rapha, whose bronze spearhead weighed 300 shekels and who was armed with a new sword, said he would kill David. But Abishai, son of Zeruiah, came to David's rescue, and he struck the Philistine down and killed him. And then David's men swore to him, saying, 'Never again will you go out with us to battle, so that the lamp of Israel will not be extinguished.'" And after this, there's another battle against the Philistines in Gob on this occasion. Sibekai, the Hushathite, killed Saph, one of the descendants of Rapha. In another battle with the Philistines at Gob, Elhanan, son of Jair, the Bethlehemite, killed the brother of Goliath, the Gittite, who had a spear with a shaft like a weaver's rod. In another battle, which took place at Gath, there was this huge man with 6 fingers on each hand and 6 toes on each foot, 24 in total. Well, he was also descended from Rapha, and when he taunted Israel, Jonathan, son of Shemaiah, David's brother, killed him. So we see the Philistines showing up here as problems during David's reign, and we have a list of battles with famous warriors who conquered the most fearsome Philistine warriors, and they're described as strong with fierce armor and this unnatural stature, some even having physical differences, as we read there. So as we can see, this passage shows us that despite all of the rebellions, the great truth is that those rebellions against David never ultimately prospered, and David was victorious. And he didn't cause that conflict with the Gibeonites, but he still had to establish this retributive justice from the wrong that had been done to them some years before. And then we have this list of these battles against the powerful Philistines. And so these two chapters here on Mission 66, they reveal the internal threats, the external threats, the conflict, the confusion. But yet, through it all, God maintains his blessing. His hand of grace, his hand of mercy is sure. And it upholds the reign of David according to his promise. So way beyond the smell of death, God's power of life prevails, no matter what, because He is the Lord.
This is Mission 66 with our teacher, John Matthews. I'm Esther, and I'm the resident inquirer, and I'm here to gain some clarity on the chapters that we've just read here on the program. Now, John, I'm going to start us off with this one because, you know, here we see this great King David, and we acknowledge that in his humanity, he makes mistakes. So could it be that he actually made the mistake by choosing Amasa as the commander of his army? And perhaps he made an even bigger mistake by failing to punish Joab for murdering Amasa.
Well, if we look at how these things work out in the Old Testament, maybe David did make a mistake. You know, David was distressed that Joab had killed Absalom, never got over it. And that's why he suddenly removed Joab from his position, replacing him with Amasa. Yet it's evident that Amasa was not perfectly suited for the position. He was indecisive. We understand he was unable to organize the army effectively. And David therefore intervenes to reorganize the army quickly with Abishai and other warriors in order to put down Sheba's rebellion in a timely manner. Joab, I'm sure, driven by a degree of jealousy, kills Amasa and so takes back his position by force. And, you know, that was serious, what he did there. But you're right, David should have disciplined Joab for this, yet does nothing. And so that is surprising, really. And maybe it is a reflection of David not thinking quite as clearly as once he did.
All right, John. Well, looking at chapter 21, we see that there's this famine that's caused by Saul's sin against the Gibeonites. Perhaps you can provide some understanding here for us, especially on this idea of broken promises needing to be repaid later on. How can we understand that?
Well, look, in this case, Joshua makes this covenant with the Gibeonites during the conquest of Canaan. And even though the Gibeonites had lied and deceived Joshua so that they wouldn't be killed, that was the context, God considered the promise to be binding nonetheless upon all Israel, and that extended into the future. And because of the breach of that oath, even many years on, they still suffered the consequences directly linked to it until things were made right. And God keeps his word. And, you know, he expects us to keep ours. What would happen if God, after saying that whoever believes on the name of his only begotten Son of God would be saved, what if he adjusted that or changed his mind? But God cannot do that because there is no wrong or sin or imperfection in God. So he cannot lie and he cannot break promises that he's made. And we can thank and praise him for the consistency of his beautiful, perfect nature.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, now let's look at these Philistines who, as we know, are a thorn in Israel's side. They're always lurking around the corner, ready to attack Israel at every turn. And I think you alluded to it earlier on. They're always attacking Israel, but they're always being struck down and being defeated. And with that, John, you'd think that they perhaps might have learned their lesson about trying to defeat David. I mean, clearly it didn't work out for them.
Yeah, and you know, not only that, Esther, but, you know, we read there that there were still giants amongst the Philistines. Relatives of Goliath were these six-fingered men of huge stature, you know, blokes who would be pretty handy, you'd imagine, in a rugby team or an NFL lineup. But every time, though, the Philistines come against David with strength, and boy, did they have some strength. Well, it's meaningless to God in a sense because he enables Israel to be stronger. And he raises up some mighty, strong and able warriors who defeat them and men of courage and men of trust and faith and obedience in God, more importantly, than any physical stature. Now, David was born around 1000 BC, He lived to be 70 years of age, and history shows that the Philistines themselves were not finally conquered until around 604 BC by Babylon's Nebuchadnezzar II. So they were going to be around some hundreds of years after David had gone.
Well, John, you know, you mentioned David living to about 70 years old. I don't know, kind of sounds to me that he was at least beginning to approach retirement age.
Yeah, and it's interesting, isn't it? Let's paraphrase it and try and, you know, work out a little bit what's going on here, because they're in the heat of the battle and you can imagine these guys looking to themselves. And he's vulnerable, David, and they recognize that. And there's an opportunity for one of the opposition to take him out. And they look at each other and they say to David, listen, you are not coming out here again because it's just too dangerous. You're not the warrior that once you were, you know, words to that effect. You know, because you're right. He's in his pretty much his late 60s in this last war with the Philistines. And perhaps he's still, being young of mind, thought he was young of body as well and young enough to fight. But it's interesting that he gets tired in the middle of combat and actually has to be rescued by the younger guys who say, listen, game over. You've had a good one, but it's time to retire from the heat of the battlefield, which is some going in your late 60s, isn't it? One danger I think we face when we get older is still thinking we're young. You know, the mind is willing, but the body, the bones, the muscles, maybe not so much.
Oh, yeah, you are preaching to the choir. I understand that very well. But we thank God for, you know, for the privilege of getting older. It's definitely a blessing. Well, John, this was a great study. I think we should go ahead and look at how we can summarize these two chapters of 2 Samuel.
Yeah, let's do that. So the theme, Esther, today was the scent of death. You know, David's life as king of Israel, well, it was marked by trials, challenges, family conflicts, rebellion. And, you know, towards the latter part of his life, and many of those stemmed from indeed his own behavior. And here in chapter 20, Sheba, who's a Benjamite, leads a rebellion against David. And it just highlights this, the ongoing tribal divisions at play here in Israel. And then you've got Joab, in defiance of David, he murders Amasa to regain command of the army, reflecting Nathan's prophecy that the sword would never depart from David's house. But a wise woman later hands Sheba over, saving her city from bloodshed. And then in chapter 21, a famine occurs due to Saul's broken covenant with the Gibeonites, killing many of them. And so this oath has to be realized, and seven descendants of Saul have to die as reparations for that broken promise many years before. And David, what of him? Well, now he's aging. And he's retired from battle, whilst God is raising up warriors to defeat lingering threats posed again by the Philistines and their giants. But Israel's victory is secured and ensured here because God is with them. And God, when he's with you, will lead you forward into a different kind of life, into a different kind of way, so we can trust him, who knows the very, very best for our lives.
And that is it for Mission 66 today. Of course, the conversation continues on our social media platforms. If you'd like to give your thoughts or share your insights, or perhaps even ask a question on this episode or any episode that sparked your interest, make sure to firstly like our social media pages, that is Facebook and Instagram. Search us at Mission 66 and then leave your comment below. Well, friend, we're continuing our journey through the book of 2 Samuel next time, so please be sure to join us then. I'm Esther for John Matthews and our entire team. See you next time. This is Mission 66.
Let me remind you to head on over to mission66.org to download your study guide. It's free. Dive deeper into the Bible teaching of John Matthews and learn how it all relates to your Christian walk. Tag along with John and Esther on our Bible road trip episode by episode. Your study guide's waiting for you at mission66.org. That's where you can also post your questions or make a comment, and even help out with a donation to keep Mission 66's heart beating around the world. Hop on over to mission66.org. Mission 66 is a partnership of TWR and the ministry of Dr. Luis Seau.